Marx's emphasis on production and labor gave workers a central role in both capitalist society and the communist society that was to come. What are the consequences for your understanding of the workers' role in accumulation on the one hand and a humane post-capitalist society on the other?
Okay, well, that's a heavy question. Let me begin by talking about labor and production in capitalism first, and then perhaps say a few words on post-capitalist society. So we'll begin with capitalism. We, as I indicated, see capitalism as power. Capitalists accumulate not utils and not dead labor. They accumulate power. They accumulate not because they produce, but because they control. And they control not only the narrow process of production, but the very creordering of society at large. So capitalist production, traditionally understood in terms of use value as well as exchange value, in our view, is merely one aspect of the process of accumulation. Now, Marx's notion of accumulation certainly is based on power, but his notion of power is both too general and too limited. And trying to explain what I mean, let me backtrack and first sort of try to summarize the foundations of Marx's notion of accumulation. I think it rests on three conditions. First, bourgeois law and conventions give capitalists the power over the means of production. Second, workers compete with each other, and this competition between them drives the value of their labor power below their ability to create value. So their own value is lower than the value that they can create. And the third assumption is that commodities are traded at their value. And that fact enables capitalists to scoop the difference between the value that workers create and the value of labor power, which is what they get paid for. And this difference is the surplus value that capitalists appropriate. Now, as I said, this understanding of power, in our view, is both too general and too narrow. It's too general for two reasons. First, it pertains only to the legal and customary framework that puts all capitalists over all workers. So it has this aggregate notion. And secondly, this understanding of power is largely mechanical and automatic in the sense that it's subject to the discipline of the competitive market. So this is what, in my view, makes this notion too general. But it's also too narrow in the sense, again, for two reasons. First, Marx's concept ignores the differential essence of power. In other words, the pecking order among capitalists themselves, a pecking order that Marx considered but thought of to be secondary. And secondly, it considers all aspects of power that lie outside the so-called realm of production as external to accumulation proper. Doesn't ignore them, but it considers them to be external. And these two considerations makes Marx's notion, I think, too narrow. Now, all in all, I think that Marx has a very limited and potentially misleading conceptualization of power when it comes to understanding contemporary capitalism. The problem is that this understanding cannot be revisited from within Marx's own framework. And I think this is the most serious problem because, you know, anybody can be wrong or could be right for his time and no longer right for a different time. The question is, can you revise a certain approach? And in my opinion, what I presented right now is something that cannot be revised from within Marx's framework. Once you open up the Pandora's box of power, the very notion that capital is a purely productive economic entity immediately breaks down. And this breakdown essentially destroys the labor theory of value that requires capital to be a productive economic entity. And if you do not have a labor theory of value, then you lose the unified basis on which the Marxist theory of capitalism stand, as I indicated earlier on in the interview. So I should emphasize that I'm not saying here that we should not analyze production. That's very far from what I'm saying. What I do say is, first, that production is only one aspect of accumulation, and not necessarily the most important aspect of accumulation. Second, that accumulation is affected not by production per se, but by the control of production. And thirdly, that regardless of the role of production, production itself does not have universal units. And since capitalization and capital accumulation is a numerical quantitative process, that process cannot possibly be contained in the quantitative structure of production, because it doesn't have a universal quantitative structure. Again, production is one aspect of accumulation. It affects accumulation not directly, but only through its institutions of power. And one way or the other, production itself does not have a quantitative code of power, quantitative code, and therefore it cannot explain the quantitative code of accumulation. To understand the role of production in accumulation, I think we need to approach production from a power perspective. The question that we need to ask, I believe, is not how does a particular process or a particular production chain or a particular network of production organized per se, but how it is organized from a power standpoint. That's the crucial question when it comes to accumulation. And only when we emphasize the power aspect of accumulation, then we can incorporate production into the understanding of accumulation. Let me again try to illustrate this claim with an example to make it a bit more concrete. Let's consider the modern pharmaceutical sector. Okay? I think that there is no way to understand accumulation in this sector, and we are talking about a significant segment of capitalization, by considering the socially necessary abstract labor time that is involved in making, say, drugs. And there's no way we can understand this accumulation by thinking about the utility that this sector generates. Both of these measures, utility and abstract labor time, as I indicated, are indecipherable, conceptually as well as empirically. So they're not something we can actually use in practice. Nobody has ever found any connection between the profits and risks that are associated with pharmaceutical on the one hand and the abstract labor time that it takes to develop drugs on the other. And by the same token, nobody has ever found, or will ever find, in my opinion, a connection between the profit and risks of those of this sector and the utility that this sector generates through drugs. From a Marxist perspective, drugs are essentially bundles of knowledge, but knowledge cannot be easily reduced to labor time. The problem is that we don't know which knowledge contributes to which processes, and we certainly do not know what quantities are being contributed to the production of every particular or any particular drug. And even if we knew something on the connection between knowledge and the production of drugs, we would have no universal units to actually quantify those connections. And you can say the very same thing about the neoclassical perspective. There is really no way to know the utility that drugs generate. In many cases, this is entirely fictitious. In other words, we're dealing with complex structures of placebo and actual effect that need to be translated into some measures of enjoyment, and those measures do not exist. To argue that somehow the capital stock of the pharmaceutical sector is denominated in terms of the utility it generates seems to me not a very fruitful way for understanding accumulation in that sector, and certainly it's completely impossible from a practical perspective. So instead of going on a futile hunt for labor inputs or util outputs, I think we should try to understand power as it manifests itself in the modern business of drugs. So certainly we should consider the differential power aspects of the labor process in this sector. I'm not denying, again, that production, narrowly understood, is important, but it has to be understood from the viewpoint of power. But that aspect of pharmaceutical accumulation is only one aspect of many. There are many other things that are equally, if not more important. For example, the differential power system of patents on which the entire business rests, or the high politics of R&D, how it is being financed and by whom. The university system that produces scientists and engineers, who finances it, how and how it affects profitability in that sector. The differential system of government regulation or lack of regulation. The system of subsidies that engulfs this sector. The differential system of taxation or of international transfer pricing, etc., etc., etc. So there's a whole list of power institutions that can completely overwhelm any significance of production, even if we understand production from a power perspective, and these things do not fit either to the neoclassical perspective or to the Marxist perspective. They're always in the status of distortion. In other words, we need to understand the process of drug production, if at all, as part and parcel of a very much larger process of capital as power and of differential accumulation in that sector. Let's take another example, the automobile sector. If you were to look only on the assembly line of Toyota, you would actually miss the show. And you end up knowing practically nothing about the company's accumulation of capital. Again, the power struggle over working conditions, over salaries, over particular use of technological processes, of course, are all important, but they are insufficient to understand, for one, the differential high politics of urbanization on the one hand, suburbanization on the other, and highway construction and road construction, etc. You need to understand the pattern of differential taxation and subsidies for these sectors. You need to understand cultural shifts that condition differential purchasing patterns and the use of, say, private versus public transportation. You need to understand the differential credit operations of Toyota and other companies in that sector. You need to understand the differential leverage that they have with governments. You need to understand patent laws that affect this sector. And all of these considerations can only be understood from a power perspective. I think these examples should be used as illustrative rather than exclusive. They actually are applicable to every sector of accumulation. The key is not production, and it's not the sale of a particular commodity or service. The key is the accumulation of capital. And from the viewpoint of capital, the question is not whether these processes are economic or productive. The question is whether and to what extent they impinge on the differential power of the owners of these processes. So all in all, I think labor is very much part of the process of accumulation, but the emphasis should be on power, and labor should be one aspect of power structures that we analyze. Now, to go to the other part of your question, a few words maybe on labor and production and in a post-capitalist society. If we're thinking about a humane post-capitalist society, because there can certainly be an inhumane post-capitalist society, a very barbaric alternative to capitalism. So if we think about the humane alternative, we can no longer use the capitalist approach to production, an approach that I think is shared by both neoclassicists and Marxists. And the key to this approach, and the reason I think it's common to both liberal and Marxist views, is the concept of input-output. This concept can be traced back to the physiocrats, perhaps in the 18th century in Europe, and it certainly culminated in the 20th century with a very complex structure that was perhaps more than anything kind of articulated by Vasily Leontiev, who won the Nobel Prize for his articulation of input and output structures. Now, the emphasis of the input-output approach is over efficient production, meaning that What we're trying to get is production that uses the least inputs for a given output, or the maximum output for a given amount of inputs. And the prerequisite for this emphasis, for the notion of efficient production, is something that is worth articulating, because often it's taken for granted and it should not be taken for granted. And that prerequisite is twofold. First, we need to be able to clearly identify and delineate and measure the inputs and the outputs. So these have to be clearly articulated and measurable. And we have to be able to know how are they objectively related to one another. For example, we need to know the exact input that go, or the set of inputs that go into the production of a pharmaceutical substance. And we need to, according to this approach, try to minimize that set of inputs in order to get that output, or to maximize the output of the pharmaceutical substance for a given set of inputs that are required to its production. This is the conventional setting, and I think this conventional setting is common to Marxism and liberal economics. And I think that this setup cannot hold in a humane post-capitalist society. And I have two reasons to make this claim. First, in a complex knowledge structure, the relationship between the inputs and the outputs are not objectively given. In fact, I would argue that we do not know what knowledge goes into production of a drug. And in fact, we do not know what other production processes are affected by that knowledge that went into the production of a drug. So for example, you take a certain knowledge in physics that affects the production of penicillin, say. We don't know how much of this knowledge goes into the penicillin, and we don't know how much of this knowledge goes into other things. In other words, we cannot delineate the objective structure of inputs and outputs that makes the production of drugs, and we cannot separate it from the production of other things. And I dare say that this impossibility applies, in fact, to every complex production process. In fact, economists, whether they're liberal or radical, have only a black box. They see the inputs for which they pay and the outputs which they sell. But they do not see the free inputs, and they have no idea what happens in the black box through which the inputs are translated into the outputs. So the structure itself is articulated often quite arbitrarily and not at all objectively, and it is most clear when we deal with matters of knowledge, which are becoming more and more important as automation over the past few hundred years has become more and more pronounced. So that's the first problem. I think that the trivial statement that input-output structures should be used is based on the a notion that we know them, but in fact we do not. We pretend that we know them. The second problem is that in capitalism, inputs are considered a means to an end of output. And I think that Marxists have often did not pay enough attention and adopted this convention. And I don't think that this is a proper thing to adopt in a humane post-capitalist society. And the reason is that the very process of production, which means the well-being of the inputs, which means the well-being of the human beings that produce the output, is as important as the outcome of that process, namely the well-being that is generated by the output. So the process of production is as important as the consequences of that process. The two sides, the inputs and the outputs, are intertwined. And there is no longer clear reason to sort of say that we want to minimize inputs per units of output, because the inputs themselves are part of the well-being we need to consider, not just the output. So we have a set of entanglements here. One is that the input-output structure itself is not at all objectively given. And secondly, it's not at all clear that we want to have this input-output structure in the first place in a humane society. The conclusion that I'm drawing from that is that we need a completely different accounting system. We need to develop an accounting system, and I do not pretend to have even the beginning of such an accounting system. We need to develop an accounting system that uses not only objective considerations, it has to use objective considerations, but it also needs to recognize the intersubjective assessments of what is good and what is bad on every stage of the process. And that it needs to take as its goal not the end point, but the entire development of the process from the beginning till the end as part of human existence. So regarding your question on the role of labor in a future society, the short answer is that we have to begin with inventing a new accounting system, a completely different accounting system that is something that either neoclassicists or Marxists do not yet have.